You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Before we take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue, two things I want to bring up. One is, if you are an advertiser and you want to reach an audience of over 300,000 people on live talk radio and my podcast, these are law enforcement officers and their families and supporters, please contact me at randy@americaoutloud, or you can contact me at randylsutton@live.com, randylsutton@live.com, and let's talk about getting your message out to my audience. Now, the other thing is, in a shameless display of self-promotion, my book, The Power of Legacy, along with my other books, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, and A Cop's Life, are all available on Amazon.com. You will love these books, especially if you are a law enforcement officer or a supporter. Maybe you want to buy a book for one of your friends. Check it out at Amazon.com. Now, we are going to take a walk into the briefing room because there's lots to talk about today, and I'm going to give you my view from the blue. The first thing I want to talk about this week is the nonsense, the politically correct nonsense, that just doesn't ever seem to end in this country when it comes down to law enforcement. Now, you know, people have become so thin-skinned that anything that might resemble humor seems to be a flashpoint where it creates anger and resentment. Now, what I'm going to talk about in this particular case, I'm scratching my head about. In Idaho, there is a sheriff there, the Nez Perce County Sheriff Joe Rodriguez. Now, his wife, not even him, his wife posted a meme on his Facebook page by mistake. They apparently share the same computer. She went to his page and put up one of those little meme things. And here's the meme had a picture of this very old woman. And the caption is, "My ass was groped in 1886, and I waited till now to tell about it." Okay. I think that's pretty funny considering everything that's going on in this insane world. But people lost their minds. People are calling for the sheriff to resign. Resign because of this insensitive, terrible meme that was posted on his page. All right, let's get real here for a minute, people. Come on. First of all, is humor now gotten to the point where if somebody is offended by it, we lose our minds? Good God Almighty. Let's get a life here, okay? So, and here's the funny part. This guy didn't even post it. His wife posted it on his page by mistake. So he came out and he apologized. But that isn't enough. That simply is not enough for the haters, for the law enforcement haters. They want his head because they're saying that he was mocking sexual assault victims who don't immediately report the crimes against them. Now, he didn't even post the damn thing, right? And his wife publicly said, "Yep, I did it. I apologize." And she was criticized so vehemently and so critically that she was in tears at this press conference. Just come on, okay? So if I were the sheriff, now remember, the sheriff's an elected position. The mayor can't fire him. The only reason you could get fired from being the sheriff is for some criminal conduct. If I were him, I would tell his critics to go stuff it, because he didn't do anything wrong. His wife, posted something that, that some people found inappropriate. Well, I'm sorry. I got to say, tell them to cram it, Sheriff. Don't give in to this nonsense, and life will go on. People will forget it tomorrow. And good heavens, can't we just get a life here? So, you know, there's humor here, people. And if you don't like it, just forget about it. Turn it off. And that's my take on that particular thing. Now, let's get into something that's a little more serious here. And that is, you know, we have been seeing around the country assaults on law enforcement officers increasing. In fact, this week, a really, really dangerous attack took place, very disturbing, in Selma, Alabama. A patrol officer was in his patrol car, driving down the street, doing his thing, and sniper, and it looks like, from the evidence, two snipers, opened fire on him, shot him through the windshield of his car. The high-powered rifle rounds went through his ballistic vest, and the sniper was good enough, skilled enough, to shoot him twice through his body armor. The officer is still alive, but the fact is that this was an assassination attempt, and Selma has had three such attacks in the last few months. This is a symptom of something very, very dangerous. The war on cops, and this is an elevation, if you will, because if a police officer is on patrol, which they are on 24/7, and they are targeted by snipers, this is going to have a tremendous chilling effect on the law enforcement response. This is something that is symptomatic of an escalation in the war on cops. And apparently this is a skilled individual or individuals that have opened fire on this officer for absolutely no reason whatsoever other than they wanted to kill a police officer. Now, these type of attacks have increased. The ambush attacks at different states, different tactics. Some officers have been simply seated in a restaurant when a gunman walks in, opens fire on them through the window outside, or comes in and opens fire. But this is a sniper attack, and this is particularly cowardly, if you ask me. They're in a position of cover. They are not facing a combat situation. They're simply a coward. And they're opening fire from a secured position with a high-powered rifle. This has a really worries me. And if we see more and more attacks like this in this particular style, I'm afraid that we're going to have a very, very difficult time combating it. But, you know, the attacks on law enforcement are taking place in a lot of different ways. There was a video that just surfaced, and I find it really, really disturbing. It was a video that surfaced from an incident in Riverside, California. Now, there's a Riverside County Sheriff's deputy, and he is assigned as a school resource officer to a high school. He sees a fight taking place outside of the school. It's a male who is beating a female. He goes over, tries to pull the male off of the female. He is unable to do so. The guy does not cooperate, even though he's in full uniform. The deputy takes out his expandable baton and starts whacking the kid in the back of the leg in order to get his attention and get him to stop. Well, this kid, knowing that he's in full, the deputy's in full uniform, attacks the officer, takes the baton away from the officer, at which point that officer was justified in shooting and killing this individual. He did not. A teacher came out and wrestled the baton away from the suspect. Now, he fought the officer. They got him into custody, and the mother of this suspect. Now, this kid's a big kid. He body slams the deputy, picks him up, and drops him literally on the pavement. That's how big and powerful this kid is. I think he's 17 years of age. And the mother, they arrest him. The mother says publicly, comes out and defends her son, saying that he did nothing wrong. He did nothing wrong. What is going on here? She says, well, if he was hitting me with that baton, I don't see anything wrong with my son taking it away from him and trying to hit him with it. This is the insanity that's taking place in this country. If the parents are so ignorant and so stupid that they will instill in their children a lack of respect to the point where they encourage them and defend them for physically attacking a law enforcement officer, not to even mention the fact that the kid was beaten on another student, on a woman. How are we raising these children? What will we expect of them if they are listening to their parents? This is, to me, this is the symptom of what's taking place all over this country, where we are teaching kids this level of disrespect, and the fact that there is no right and wrong to them when it comes down to interactions with the police. And we're going to see, the more we see of this, and of course, you know, maybe, is it because it's California, the land of the weird? I don't know, but I do know that this is a very, very disturbing situation. Now, talk about disturbing situations. There was a convention, a law enforcement training convention called Cops West, and it was up in Sacramento, California earlier this week. Now, in the last portion of the show, you're going to hear my remembrance of Deputy Sheriff Mark Stasiak of the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department, who was killed in the line of duty, shot to death. Black Lives Matter decided that they wanted to have a protest against the police the day after Deputy Stasiak was murdered in the line of duty. And they wanted to shut down this training conference where police officers are trying to get a higher skill level so that they can protect the people of their communities. Now, the sheriff of Sacramento County called for people who are concerned about law enforcement to show up at this protest and counter protest. I think that showed not only a lot of guts, but was the right thing to do. Well, he was roundly criticized, as you might well imagine, by Black Lives Matter and their minions and all the political hacks that subscribe to the Black Lives Matter political platform. And they blamed the sheriff. What is going on with our world when a police officer can be killed in the line of duty, can be murdered in the line of duty, and a sheriff can't exert his First Amendment right to give his opinion without being vilified by the media and by social justice groups and by pandering politicians. And he eventually apologized. I wish he hadn't done that. I wish he had doubled down. Because I don't think he had anything to apologize for. But once again, it shows the disrespect. You know, the memory of a police officer who literally gave his life to protect his own community, and instead of respecting that, the Black Lives Matter and affiliated groups came out and protested and put coffins out in the street, saying that the police were out killing, you know, black people at, you know, because of their racial bias. And yeah, it's just getting old and old and old and old, and I'm sick of it. And you know, it coming on the heels of the murder of this police officer, I just find it so discouraging and so distasteful. It's time that our police leaders, like this sheriff, stand up and say enough is enough. We're going to stand up for the lives of our officers as well. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. If you're a police officer, or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, and that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it. And this is really good stuff. And it's not, you don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, you know, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And it's only available at StinkyVest.com. Go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com. See their products, and it is worthwhile. For those of you who are involved in investigative work, there is an amazing software that you've got to take a look at from Blue Light LLC. And Blue Light is a company owned by a retired Special Forces Sergeant Major. He is a strong supporter of law enforcement. And this software is amazing. It is incredible for conspiracy investigations, narcotics investigations, homicide. It's called Analyst Notebook, and it's a product that has been used very, very successfully in bringing down a lot of bad guys. The reason the Special Forces Sergeant Major got involved in it is because he used to use it in the Middle East for discovering IED, improvised explosive devices, originators, and their networks. But it's great for civilian police work. So check it out, Blue Light LLC, it's Analyst Notebook, and it is an amazing product. Check it out.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I'm very pleased to have with me in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio a law enforcement officer who has been through hell and back. Her name is Betty Shelby. She was with the Tulsa Police Department when she was involved in one of the most famous, if you will, or infamous shooting incidents in policing in modern America. And as a result of that videotaped shooting, she was vilified publicly. She was not given the support by her department, and then she was arrested for murder. Her name is Betty Shelby. She is a law enforcement professional, spent years with the Tulsa Sheriff's Office, years with the Tulsa Police Department, and now with the Rogers County Sheriff's in Oklahoma. Betty, thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, to tell your story.
Well, thank you very much, Randy. I appreciate being here.
So now, really what, we're not going to talk about the incident itself. I know there's still litigation going on, so that's something we're not going to talk about. But the aftermath, what you have experienced, the way you were treated, not just by the public, but by your own agency, has led you to create a presentation given to law enforcement officers all over the country about surviving a high-profile critical incident. So let's talk about that first of all. What's the name of the presentation?
The presentation that I put together is called Surviving the Aftermath of a Critical Incident. And I go into talking about how I survived emotionally, physically, financially, and legally. These are challenges that my husband and I had to face and come up with solutions to. Nobody had ever prepared us for what we experienced after the shooting. So now I try to present it. Yes?
No, go ahead.
Now I try, my husband and I both, we try to give tools to the other officers to help them with a possible solution to a challenge that they may face in their career.
You know, I want to make clear to the audience that your husband is also a Tulsa police officer who not only was a witness to this shooting, but was the helicopter pilot that flew above it when this incident took place.
It is unique, but not so much anymore. There's been several occasions where the husband and wife officer involved in an incident, but this is unique. So my husband was a Tulsa police officer for almost 30 years. He did retire, and he is now working at the Creek County Sheriff's Office. He's a sergeant there. And so
you didn't get enough of those 30 years?
No, he did not. I guess whenever you are called to this, you are called to it, and that's what you know to do. And that's something else I address in there in my presentation on, you got to come up with something else in life if you don't have this. But that's for my class. So my husband, yes, he was there filming this situation as it unfolded. He's not the one who had the bad dude comment. That was the other pilot in the helicopter. My husband, he's the one who said, "Where you at, Betty Jo?" I'll never forget hearing that when I reviewed the video. But his perspective, Randy, is that, one, he's a spouse that is going through these challenges, the threats, the harassment, all of that with me. He's also a fellow officer who is seeing the effects of this situation on the officers and how they do their work,
right,
and how they feel that they must change.
I want to give just in case people have been living under a stone. I just want to mm-hmm. Make a quick reference that this shooting that took place was on September 16, 2016. And this individual, Terrence Crutcher, who was laden with PCP, was mm-hmm. a very large individual who was completely non-compliant with your commands, went to his vehicle after basically pushing past you, reached into the car, or attempted to reach into the car, and you, believing that he was going for a weapon, used your deadly force options. This created a huge political turmoil within your police agency, and also throughout America, as this was videotaped. And once again, we were going through these false narratives of racist policing and all, and as a result of that, you were basically thrown to the wolves and prosecuted, which is one of those things that we have seen recently in a number of cases. But to you, this was a watershed moment in your career as a police officer and as a human being. So let's talk about the aftermath of this mm-hmm. Terrible shooting.
Well, what happened immediately when my name was released as the officer who was involved in the shooting was the immediate threats. Emails started coming in, mail started coming in, protests started. It was just almost immediate. So there was a sense of fear amongst the leaders. You could just feel it and see it, because there are these, let me see how to say this, political groups that use violence to get their way were starting to amp up and demand that they have their way. And
they're, by their way, you're meaning your prosecution and conviction, demanding it.
Absolutely. And what the fear was that the whole town was going to burn down like Ferguson.
Right, exactly.
And so you could just see how it all folded, that all these threats were coming in, not only to me, but to the department, and the politicians were scared. And they're like, "Here, take her." They just gave me to the political aspects of this. So well, here's your sacrificial lamb.
And I'm sure that's exactly how you felt. When
that's how I felt.
And I don't know how deep you can get into this, but at what point after the shooting did you realize that you were going to be served up like a Christmas turkey?
The day that the DA made his announcement, he was filing charges.
And that was within that was shortly after the shooting.
Yes, it wasn't even a week. So they were on Sergeant Walker, hey, when are you going to have the investigation done? When's the report going to be done? Over and over, when are you going to have it done? Normally an investigation will take weeks, months, but they were demanding that he hurry up and do it now. And he finally said, I'll have it to you Friday. I will have it done Friday. And he'd made mention that he was going to suggest that it not be any charges be filed. And so he was getting it prepared to turn his complete report in on Friday, and then Thursday morning is whenever the DA made his announcement.
Well, and that rush to judgment was clearly a sign in your mind that this was going to be a political witch hunt.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about the aftermath. You went through a horrendous trial. I can't even imagine. I mean, and let's talk about this. You know, how long from the time that the shooting took place till the time that you were found not guilty of anything, what was that time period?
8 months and one day. It was a record marathon of a trial. We are so used to a trial being 1, 2, 3 years out from the incident. I mean, that is just what you see on a day-to-day basis. Oh, man, that happened years ago. Yeah, they're just now getting around to trying it. And here I go from day one to the non-guilty verdict, 8 months, one day.
Who was pushing it forward to move so quickly? Was it the prosecution or your defense?
No, it was the prosecution.
Because they wanted to serve you up and as quickly as possible.
They did. They did. And, you know, there's an election going on right now with the DA. So I, not being very political-minded, can only assume that this was part of the DA trying to use this case to get re-election.
Oh, there's of course, this is what we're seeing around the country. Now, you told me mm-hmm. something that was startling to me and very, very disappointing, and that was mm-hmm. in the aftermath of a critical incident, any critical incident, a law enforcement officer is facing, you know, a tremendous amount of emotional upheaval and psychological trauma. And police leaders, if they are a good leader and a true leader, they assist their officers in getting through that. How did your chief treat mm-hmm. you?
Well, that was surprising. My chief elected to not reach out to me. He chose to not contact me at all. Never once did he call me or send message to me of any kind to ask if I'm okay. He did sit down with the family of the deceased and prayed with them and watched the video with them, but never did he reach out to ask if I'm okay or to pray with me.
That's absolutely sickening. Absolutely sickening.
It does make one feel that they're alone. Here is the one person that is in full command of you with work. And
How did that affect you emotionally?
Emotionally, I felt abandoned.
Right.
Now, right. Let me make clear, the officers on my department, absolutely supportive. Absolutely.
That's great to hear.
It was the chief that was not. Even when they were told that they could not contact me, they still were able to send message to me that they supported me. Now, eventually, part of that restriction was lifted. You know, below captain, the ranks of below captain could contact me, but anyone captain and above was forbidden to contact me.
But I just, for me to conceive of a police leader for making a pariah out of one of their own police officers, to me, is unforgivable and unconscionable. But that's just me, of course. But it was these events. It was this horrendous treatment by your chief, by the stress of going through a trial, that in a way changed the course of history for you, and led to your wanting to help other police officers who have been in critical incidents by creating the presentation that you're currently doing.
Right. So what I experienced, no one had ever told me about. And I think that's because really no one has experienced it like this before. Yes, you have Darren Wilson, who experienced the Ferguson event. But we haven't heard of how did he survive that, other than he changed his name and he moved. And that is a solution. That is a perfectly fine solution. But I want to go further than that. Here is what I faced with being threatened by political groups, by being charged, falsely charged with a crime, having to deal with not having my paycheck come in and wonder how am I going to make my mortgage, and how am I going to legally survive all of this, and then what do I do afterwards? If I make it through this, how do I survive afterwards? So these are things that nobody told me how to survive. And our department, our training, they do a wonderful, absolutely wonderful job of teaching us how to use the tools to survive a moment. How to survive the moment. But we are not fully trained and prepared to survive the days, the weeks, the months, and the years afterwards. And this is a testament, because the average number of officers per year who take their life is 130. That is 130 officers each year who didn't get the help that they needed from their department, from their peers, and they had to suffer alone. It is my mission to help as many officers as I can to survive the critical incidents that they go through. And it does not have to be an officer-involved shooting. You can use these tools to survive any type of critical incident that you go through.
You know, it's,
we have got to do a better job at saving our lives.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right on everything that you're saying, and I appreciate the fact that, and I know how difficult it is to create a presentation that when you're talking about something that is so personal, that is still, I mean, an emotional roller coaster for you, and then to present this information in a way that affects the audience. I mean, you're talking about a huge challenge, and one that is a difficult challenge. So I applaud you for taking this. I know you just did one very recently. You did one of your presentations to was it a police agency or a police group?
It was a police group. So there was a host agency and the surrounding area agencies came in to attend.
And how was it received? How did it, because you can tell right away whether you're connecting with your audience.
Absolutely. It was so well received. Normally, when you do a class, you ask people to do reviews, and you may get 3, 4,
right,
maybe not even half of your reviews back. Every time I've presented this class, I've gotten 100% reviews handed back to me. And what is consistent throughout these reviews is, great class. This needs to be mandatory for every officer to attend.
Well, this is one of those things that I'm very glad to have the opportunity to share your message with not only my law enforcement audience, but the people out there, so that they know what you went through and how you've been dealing with it. You know, one of the things that is so important here is peer support and not feeling like you're alone. And even though your department's chief initially told the officers not to even contact you, which to me is one of the most unconscionable orders I can imagine, you still got the support from the men and women who served. And how important was
Absolutely.
That to you?
That was so important, because these are the people that you go to work with. You have stood side by side and faced challenges together. Some of these guys and gals I stood beside when we were being shot at. I mean, bullets landing just inches away from our feet. And I couldn't think of facing other challenges without these guys. These are my family. They are my brothers. They are my sisters. And when you go through something in your life, who do you turn to? You turn to your family. And we are a family of blue. Only the family of blue would know what we're going through and would know and understand the support that we need. And so, even though initially they were told that they couldn't reach out to me, and man, I needed them the most, they still were able to get that message to me. I love you. I support you. And that gave me strength, knowing that I wasn't abandoned by them.
Well, that's I think of all the messages that you could give, that's probably one of the most important, is to be present for another officer. You know, one of the things that the cops are really good at doing is physically backing each other up. You know, when mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing more. There's nothing more important, if you will, than to know that when you hear those sirens coming when you're in trouble, but we're not that mm-hmm. good when it comes to revealing ourselves emotionally and being there when someone really needs us. And that
exactly.
is such an important message.
Because we do not need to let any officer feel that they are abandoned or alone. There were several officer-involved shootings that occurred after mine, and I didn't know the officers that well. Some of them I did. But I made the choice to call them and send them a text, something. Say, hey, I'm here if you need me. I'm thinking of you. And just that simple comment meant so much to them. It was a few months later that one of them had approached me and said, thank you. That meant so much to me for you to send me a text. And that you have all these challenges going on. You've got all of this going on in your life, and you took that moment to check on me. That meant more to me than anything else.
That's
so that's what we need to do. We need to take the moment to reach out to our officers, our brothers and sisters, and make sure they're okay.
Couldn't agree 100% more. That's exactly probably the biggest takeaway. You know, I want to get back to a little bit of something that we didn't touch on, and that is, you know, your legal expenses must have been absolutely astronomical here. To survive this economically when you're prosecuted for murder is just, I mean, something I can't even conceive of. I know that you got help. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. I am such a proponent of the FOP legal defense. I just believe in them. And here's why. I only pay a small fee each month with part of my union dues to pay for this FOP legal defense. For my trial, the criminal trial alone, that included two attorneys, four professional witnesses, two investigators, and some assistants and other things that went along, $411,000 is what the FOP legal defense paid for my criminal expenses.
Wow.
Criminal defense expense. Now, that does not include the civil. Don't know what the civil will be. The city of Tulsa did choose to represent me in the civil aspects right now. So for right now, I'm not having to use the FOP legal defense, but they do have an attorney who's monitoring it. And at any point that it's necessary that attorney takes over, then the FOP legal defense will pay for that as well. I was told that the civil portion, which can take years, averages between $200,000 to $300,000. Now there's one more expense that people don't think of, and that was the security. There was a group called the National Center for Police Defense who did some fundraising, and they paid over $100,000 for the blacked out Suburbans with armed security to transport me, my family, and my attorneys back and forth to court each day.
Really? I never thought of that. I never thought of that either.
Yeah, that is something that we had to take to an account, and thank goodness we had these resources to pay for that, because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to have that. So we're looking at close to $1 million for criminal and civil and security.
And
all I had to pay was $25 a month.
That is incredible, and I can't think of a more important message about having a team behind you. And, you know, it's unfortunate there are agencies in this country which do not have any representation, but it is available to them through the Fraternal Order of Police, and I think that's a very important topic. So we're getting low on time, and I want to let the listeners out there know, how do they contact you in order to book you to speak about this highly important topic?
So right now, what I have is an email address, and that is iswbtraining@gmail.com. Again, that's iswbtraining@gmail.com. I would love to come and present this class, because it's a message that I think every officer needs to hear, just so that they can prepare. If I can give one tool to each person to help them survive this career, then I've done my job.
I that's about as well said as it could possibly be. And for listeners, that if you need to, contact me, randy@americaoutloud.com. I will forward that information on to you. One thing that I really want to stress here, Betty, is that you did what you felt you needed to do in a critical incident, just as many officers have to make that split-second decision. And I am glad that you not only survived this event physically, but you are sharing your story with others, and that you got support, not through your own department, but through the people on your department. And then I think also a big shout out to your new boss, the Rogers County Sheriff.
Yes. Yes, what an amazing man. He emerged as the leader that everyone was looking for. He stood up and he said the words that every officer wanted to say but couldn't. And he made the simple statement, I would hire Betty Shelby. With that in mind, I thought, I want to work for that man. That's the man I want to work for.
And now you are.
So kudos to, yes, kudos to Sheriff Scotty Walton. I could not have been blessed with a better leader than he.
And the next time I'm in Oklahoma, I'm buying that man a beer.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Betty, thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, sharing your message, and you and I will stay in touch and hopefully bring you back again after you've done this course for a while, and we'll talk about this critically important topic one more time.
Randy, thank you so much for having me on here.
Thank you. Those of you who have followed me for any length of time know that in addition to being a 33-year law enforcement officer, I'm also an author. I've written 4 books, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, A Cop's Life, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and my latest book, which was actually just released only a couple weeks ago, is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. It's a much different book than what I've written before, but it is truly an inspirational book because I had traveled the country talking to people who have done amazing things with their lives, people like Frank Shankwitz, who, when he was an Arizona State Trooper, created the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Gary Sinise, who's done amazing things for military and law enforcement, and a number of people, some names you know, some names you don't, but this book is full of inspiration. Changed my life doing this book. Now, here's something I'm going to share with you. You know, I have a lot of Facebook followers, you know, more than 25,000 of them. But Facebook is not allowing me to share the message of my book. I think they call it shadow banning, and it's very, very disturbing. So I'm going to ask your help. First of all, I would love for you to go to Amazon.com. It's available on Kindle. It's available on audiobook, and of course in hardcover and softcover. I would love for you to pick up a copy of this book, share it with your children, because it is full of inspiration about how everyone can become a personal hero. But I'd also ask you to share this information with your friends on Facebook and other social media, because I'm fighting an uphill battle. Shadow banning is a real thing. I go to share it with my followers, and it keeps on getting unapproved, saying it's too political. There's nothing political about this book. It's about good people. I'd ask for you to share this message. I need your help to get this message out, because this book can change the world. When you talk about becoming a personal hero, you change the life of one person. You add to that person's life, and you change the world. So if you would, check me out on Amazon.com. All my books are available there. But the Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And I appreciate your support. To my active duty law enforcement listeners, if you are looking for extra work, that is the same type of work that you're doing, working traffic assignments, security assignments through your department, there is a company you need to know about, Law Enforcement Specialists. Law Enforcement Specialists is in most states in this country, and they get you extra work. They work with your agency to do it. It's all covered by your department's policies, and they are basically your place to go to work extra duty assignments. You know, I know that it's sometimes difficult to get those assignments due to the scheduling difficulties and all, but check with them. Law enforcement specialists, go to offdutypoliceofficers.com, offdutypoliceofficers.com, or give them a call, 623-223-9553, and they are called law enforcement specialists. They will get you some work assignments, because let's face it, we all need to take a vacation now and then. You got to pay for it. Give them a call, offdutypoliceofficers.com at 623-223-9553.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week I have two names to read. The first is Deputy Sheriff Mark V. Stasiuk of the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department. Deputy Sheriff Mark Stasiuk was shot and killed at approximately 1:50 p.m. as he and another deputy responded to a disturbance call at an auto parts store on Folsom Boulevard. A male subject opened fire on them without warning as they arrived on the scene, fatally wounding Deputy Stasiuk and wounding the other officers. Other responding deputies shot and wounded the suspect as he fled on foot. He was then taken into custody. Deputy Stasiuk had served with the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department for 4.5 years. Deputy Sheriff Mark V. Stasiuk, Sacramento County Sheriff's Department, California. End of Watch, Monday, September 17th, 2018. The second law enforcement officer to give his life in the line of duty this week, Corrections Officer Joseph Parisi of the Minnesota Department of Corrections in Minnesota. Joseph Parisi, Corrections Officer, suffered a fatal heart attack after responding to an incident in which an inmate assaulted another officer at the Minnesota Correctional Facility, Oak Park Heights. The inmate injured two additional officers before being subdued at about noon. Officer Parisi returned to his post after the incident, but collapsed a short time later. He was transported to Regents Hospital, where he passed away. Officer Parisi has served with the Minnesota Department of Corrections for 4 years. Corrections Officer Joseph Parisi, Minnesota Department of Corrections. End of Watch, Monday, September 24th, 2018. May these officers rest in peace. I want to thank you for tuning in this week to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. You know, we do our best to get the word out here on this particular show about the plight of the American law enforcement officer, those issues facing them, and the people that support them. By tuning in and listening to my show, you do show your support. Please check out thewoundedblue.org, because we are about to launch that organization, and I think that you will find something on that website that you will find very encouraging. thewoundedblue.org. Thanks again. We'll see you next week.